Blog Talk Radio.
This is Maxwell, the host of Proud to be Different on the Essence of Success Network. Today, I am going to be interviewing my guest, Sean Payne. Sean Payne is the frontman for the band Cyanautic, as well as the engineer producer of the record company Glitch Mode Recordings in Chicago. So he will be speaking to us live from Chicago. And I want to go over a few things first. Of course, every week we are lucky to have our friend Nina, who is helping out in the chat room. So any questions you want, you can pass through there. Or if you want to talk to us live after the halftime break, you can call in at area code 646-727-2914. Again, that's 646-727-2914. Okay, so I want to jump into a couple of things really quick and get those out of the way so that I can bring on Mr. Payne. So, last week we got the trailer for Star Wars, and that's been memed to death. And now this week we got the new trailer for Terminator. Connection Mimi or Meme or whatever you want to pronounce it, because I always get jumped on for it, is the one that I saw anyway, was what time is it when we're all obsessed about the new movies for Jurassic Park, Terminator, and Star Wars? So I'm piqued at it. I'm interested in it. I think that if they do a good enough story, it will work, because it looks like they dumped a lot of money into it. Matt Smith, from those of you who knew Doctor who was the last Doctor, is in it, and he got ripped. He is incredibly buffed out, as pictures floating around the internet show. The one thing that has surprised a lot of people with the most recent trailer, because I think there's like two trailers now, the second trailer, the longest, shows a lot more detail in characters going back in time, and they show Arnold. Arnold is in full form with white hair, and at one point you see him with just the robotic arm. So we'll see how this works out. A lot of people were grumbling about the new actress playing the Sarah Connor character, but you know, it is what it is. There's not much you can do about it. If she pulls it off, then we're all good. So the other thing is that I was mentioning this to John before the show, which was the whole Gamergate thing, where a bunch of guys get online and they say they don't think that women are smart enough to play video games and all this kind of stuff, and they actually take the piss out of female celebrities who stand up for themselves and whatnot. Yesterday, I was on Facebook, and in one of the Gamer Geek threads, there was this posting of all these gay guys just making horrible, nasty comments towards women and towards women playing video games and towards the female celebrities who are standing up for themselves, as well as other women and young girls, trying to say, we have the right to do this. This is ridiculous. I was so disgusted by having to see this. And it's hypocritical for a minority to take down another minority, even though technically there's more women on the planet than men, but here and over there. I made a comment saying, this is hypocritical of you. You guys are just morons. You don't know what you're dealing with. And you guys get picked on enough. Is that why you think you have the smarts to be able to pick on somebody else? And I ended up blocking the guy who ran the thread in the first place because I knew it was just going to drive me nuts. So, yeah, we shall see how this goes down. I even sent out a message to some friends of mine on Facebook that are into video games way more than I am to try and sort of explain it to me, because there just doesn't seem any logic to it, because to me, everybody's better at video games than I am. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. So I am going to bring on Mr. Sean Payne. So if you give me 1 second here, clicking in the system. And Mr. Payne, are you there with me?
Yep, I'm here.
Cool beans. All right. So as I stated, Mr. Payne here, which we are very lucky to have with us, is not only the frontman, singer, writer, creator, creative junkie for the band Cyanotic, but also the engineer, producer, director of all things awesome for the recording company Glitch Mode Records in recording in Chicago. Now, how long have you been doing the record company itself?
We started when we put out the first Cyanotic demo, so that was summer 2003. And then we released a bunch of compilations and started working with a bunch of other acts. And I think we have something like, I don't know, like 25 releases or something under our belt.
Hey.
Yeah.
Now, are these all acts that you're continuing to work with, or are they ones that have sort of just done stuff on your record label and then...
It's like
worked
a mix. It's like a mix of the two. Like, we've always kept a really good connection with our buddy JP from Seattle and his project Rabbit Junk. We've done a lot of touring together, and he appears on a bunch of the Cyanotic stuff too. He's done guitars. He did guitars, I think, on like 4 or 5 of the new songs on that new album, and then we did some international dates together this summer in the UK as Cyajunk, and we'd go up and we'd kind of play as a single unit and play like 40 minutes of Cyanotic stuff and then like 25 minutes of Rabbit Junk stuff.
Now, for those of you out there listening who don't know, the album he's referencing, Worst Case Scenario Volume 1, has come out, and he was actually here in the Seattle area the week of October. I completely missed him because I was sick as a dog, and I heard the show was fantastic. It was over on Broadway on Capitol Hill, and you guys played a great set. Now, have you experienced the Seattle music scene in the past?
Yeah, I think that was either the 4th or 5th time we were there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we've been doing the touring thing since 2003, and that was, I think that was like the 5th time.
Now, how long has this tour right now been going on that you're finishing up on?
Well, we finished last month, and that was 6 weeks. That was the longest tour that we'd embarked on up until that point.
And where did you guys all tour through? What parts of the, was it just here specifically in the States?
It was North America, and then we did, like, 3 Canadian shows.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Now, I know from friends of mine that live in Canada, there are issues with American bands going up to Canada, the land of Canada, for, was it taxation or whatever that is, or payments? How does that go?
Well, they kind of made the laws a little bit easier in the past year, but basically if you were coming in with a lot of merch, they wanted to take a tax on the merch you were going to be selling. And the way that we'd always get around it is that we'd be saying that we'd be playing showcases where you're allowed to sell merch instead of shows.
Okay.
It's a bit of a gray area.
Now, from the experience that I have here in Seattle with the small garage bands that I've been friends with people with or known about, primarily they make their money off of those tables, the merch tables. You're kind of, from what I've been able to see from what my investigations have been on you guys, you're sort of in a newer scope of an area where you have this internet connection, really, I think, down pat. Do you see there's a equal amount of money coming through on both sides of those, or do you see one is, I'm getting more merch money, or I'm getting more download money?
Well, it tends to be kind of, I'd say a lot of our sales come from places that we aren't able to play. So it kind of evens out. Like, you know, like I see us getting a lot of, I think about a third of our sales were the UK. And that's always been the case. So it was cool to get over there this year finally. For some of the rabid fans that have known about us for almost 10 years. But I see it kind of being, I don't know, people like being able to get the merch straight from the band. So if they can, it's always cool when they come out to a show and can, like, you know, BS with us and, you know, get the wares directly in hand.
I know, even for me, like when Duran Duran had their first reunion tour after like a bazillion years, and they played in Everett, and I saw them, I stood in line probably longer than it took for the Jewish folk to cross Egypt, just so I can get my hands on a couple of buttons. Now, I could have got those buttons just as easily off their fan site, but the fact that I did it after seeing a show where they were itty-bitty on this little stage and I could barely see them unless I had my binoculars. Didn't matter because it was my first time seeing them and I was going to spend $12 on 5 buttons. I didn't care. And it's that weird sort of connection that a fan gets out of it. Now, for you going back, because, I mean, you're what, mid-30s?
I'm 32, yep.
32, oh my God, such a youngster. for you, what was a lot of your inspirational music that you listened to growing up? What was the stuff that you got into that you think kind of honed you into the direction of music that you do now?
No, I mean, it was a lot of 80s and 90s industrial and electronic music, Nine Inch Nails, Ministry, Skinny Puppy, all that sort of stuff. And then a lot of the electronic acts, like The Prodigy and Chemical Brothers and all that.
And didn't the Chemical Brothers just say that they were finally breaking up?
No, they're putting out a new album next year and going
on
a tour.
Must be somebody else. Because Chemical Brothers, for me, for the longest time, were like, it was all that I would listen to. Now, when you've got this experience under your belt and you've done all this producing level and that sort of thing, does it make you kind of go back and listen to stuff differently, saying, oh, yeah, I know what they did here, or, oh, if I had the chance to produce that song or that part of that track, I could do this differently?
Well, yeah, and that's part of the fun of kind of, you know, experiencing the reverse, you know, coming from being a listener, a rabid listener of all this music, and then
kind of getting to play with a lot of our heroes and influences. It's kind of taught me a lot. And now I'm able to kind of move forward in thinking, yeah, I can do a decent amount of production for a pretty diverse amount of genres.
Yeah. Who's the, I mean, this is like the big golden egg question, but who's the one person that you've met at this point who is just the end all be all that you were just like fangirled over?
I guess when we toured with Frontline Assembly, that was pretty, that was a pretty good high point a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And, cause I grew up on all that stuff and I still listen to it. And getting to go on a full tour with them was a pretty entertaining experience.
Yeah,
we were fangirling out.
Is there somebody that if you got a chance you could be like, hey, I'm out here, I wanna do a show with you?
Oh, geez. I mean, we've covered a lot of those people. That's why we started going out on headlining tours, because we kind of like we kind of got around to playing with everybody that we kind of thought that we would never be able to when we were beginning this, and then we were just kind of like, well, let's see if we can just go and do a headlining tour, which was this last one.
Yeah.
And that was a pretty cool experience.
Now, what type of venues were you guys doing? Was it just like small bars, like the place that you played here in Seattle, or are they much larger as well?
Yeah, that's mainly what we were looking at, because I don't have like a grandiose idea that we're going to go and pack giant venues. You know, like the type of music that we make is pretty, you know, it's underground, but it's got its like rabid fan base. So we were thinking if we play these like mid-level venues, we should be able to get enough people out that they have a good time and it doesn't look like a joke for us.
Well, I would have to defend you on that fact, saying I don't think it's a joke. I listen to that music. I think it's cool. what's the, from the reaction that you've gotten so far from you doing this, you're saying since 2003, what's the things that have kind of shocked you about people's reaction towards your music?
There hasn't really been actually too much that's shocking, except for that it actually resonated with a, you know, amount of people. Like whenever you're starting something, you never really know where it's going to find, if it's going to find its place or where it's going to find its audience. And we've been really fortunate that, you know, being involved in the whole industrial kind of goth thing, you know, we're not really like, we don't really like look the part. We kind of always tried to keep a low key presence, and getting accepted by the real fans of the stuff who aren't just there to be kind of fashionistas. That's something that we always tried to that we always hoped for, and we found that, you know, whenever we see those guys in jeans and baseball caps, or the girls who aren't dressed to the nines in, like, you know, the vinyl boots and corsets and everything, like, those are the people that usually resonate with us the most, which that was the aim at the beginning. So I'm glad that we carved out our niche in a niche market.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very hard thing, and I think it's a very good point, because from the photographs, some of the photographs that I put on the revolving photos for the show, if you're out there listening, are from the show that Sean and the guys did here in Seattle. And they're, for the most part, you guys are very leisure. You're very dressed down. The last drop that I had before I split my desk, I worked with a guy who's about my age, early 40s, shaved head, very muscular, very GQ, very preppy. but he listened to like the most morose, gothic music ever. And completely the stuff that he listened to did not fit how he looked. And I was thinking about this last night when I was looking at your guys' website as well as the photos. So between you and the guitar player, which one's the Sam and which one's the Dean?
Well, I don't know if I go a little bit more into that.
Well, no, because it's referencing the Supernatural TV show where here's the characters that are into this dark stuff, but for the most part they're pretty boys. And not saying that you guys are any sense of the word pretty boys, but it's more so the fact that you don't fit that I'm wearing all black and I have my heart on my sleeve and I am death every day. To me, I'm just lazy. I don't have the kind of energy to do that. So is that something that if, say, a record company comes along and say, we're going to give you back an $8 million contract and just throws like a boatload of money at you, would you do that sort of thing? Or do you think you'd still be leisure or comfortable, I've got a life?
Well, I think that, I mean, we've been at a few record labels and it never really made a whole lot of sense in the way that they were trying to push us. So that's kind of why we diverted and just started doing the self-releasing stuff because it's been more financially lucrative that way and then we're kind of in control of the product. So I like being in control of our image and our product, and not so much trying to conform to what is the norm for the not norm, you know, if that makes sense.
And because I'm old enough to remember during the mid-80s when Robert Smith cut his hair and was wearing sunglasses and got rid of the makeup for, like, the Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me album at one point, and everybody just lost it. They were just, oh, my God, it's the end of the world. And he just went fully right back to it because he wanted to please the fans. Now, kind of being in charge of the record company and that sort of thing, right now, are there any products that you're working on or that are ready to come out that you're sort of excited about that you want to kind of promote, right?
Well, besides the worst case scenario, we have started on the second volume of all those songs and really aching to get that out. And then there's some other projects in the works. There's a long-standing kind of dorky side project thing that I've wanted to do where we basically create an alternate soundtrack for the Terminator films. So we might be finally getting that out, especially in light of, the new movie coming out. It's a nice thing to like sync up with. Those are very dear to my heart. I don't think I'd be making this music without the Terminator 2 soundtrack.
And it's interesting because the influence that certain things have on our lives and when we're those of us that are creative, do you think that if for whatever reason Cameron had never made that series, do you think that you would still be doing music or do you think you'd be making donuts at a coffee shop all day sort of thing?
I always have to wonder because, man, I was like 8 years old when I saw Terminator 2, and I will just never forget, like, that soundtrack. And I had it on tape, and I still have it. It's always in any media player I have, and it always just brings me to it brings me to, like, a zen point. So I don't know if I'd be
– yeah.
I'm sure I would have discovered this music another way, but I just remember the first time I ever heard – industrial music in the 90s, it just reminded me of, like, this sounds like Terminators playing rock music.
Okay, so we're getting close to the halfway point. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go and put our guest, Sean, on hold for a second, on mute. I'm going to play two songs. I'm going to play in full, and these music that's played today is all coming from the new album, Worst Case Scenario, Volume 1. And I'm glad that you guys are going to do Volume 2, because that's exciting for me, because this album is amazing. For those of you that are listening to the show, whether it's today live or later on there is the link directly to the fan page. It's in blue in the description of the show. That will take you to the fan page on Facebook. And below that is the HTTP link that you can cut and paste. That will take you directly to his album company, to the page for the album, so you can actually listen to the songs and purchase it. It's a fantastic album. So the first thing that I want to play, it's Futurist Leisure Pursuits. The three songs that are going to be played are very different, so it gives you a wide variety of the different stuff that these guys have to offer. So give me a second here, Sean. I'm going to go ahead and put you on Mr. Mute and then go with the music, okay?
Environment that people felt isolated, that people felt restricted, and people felt, you know, inhuman almost. You're bad. We have to restrain you. We have to curtail what you're doing. It was void of humanity. It was void of caring. It seemed more like a prison environment that you have to escape from.
An unbroken concrete landscape.
Okay, thanks folks for listening to that with us. So Sean, I was going to ask you really quick, towards the end of the song, when you got the speaking part, where did the concept of that point of the song come in?
Well, that's just kind of the whole point of the song is just kind of, you know, that relaxation point that you can't get necessarily in the urban kind of landscape that I'm, you know, that we're stuck in the downtown, you know, Chicago area where it's just, it's pretty oppressive at times. And that was kind of what we were going for in terms of like what I was choosing about the sampling. The samples actually came from something about the Pruitt ego myth, which is it was one of the first in St. Louis. It was one of the first public housing developments that kind of was originally envisioned kind of as a utopia, and then kind of descended into this pure dystopia around the first couple years of it existing.
Yeah.
And so it kind of made sense to tie in.
Oh yeah, most definitely. That clears up my question. No, it was interesting listening to it because it resonated to me, sort of what as a whole our country has been seeing for the past 2 weeks now, with the different cases that have been basically of a white police officer that has taken the lives of a black male person. And it's been illogically handled, in my viewpoint. Hearing the words and the statement and everything, I'm like, this is what all of our some people call it rioting, some people call it protests that have happened across the country. What have you folks there in Chicago have seen? Because we on the West Coast, we're fairly laid back and lazy people. Except for the WTO riots that happened, we're chill. What have you guys been having to face down there in Chicago?
Well, Eric Gardner's situation that happened earlier this week, there was a ton of protests that messed up a bunch of traffic downtown and everything. And I think that being what the third largest city in the U.S., like we're, you know, behind New York and L.A., but Chicago is a weird, it's a weird place because there's still a lot of segregation in place since we're in the Midwest. And it's not necessarily, you know, obvious, but it's just, you know, like with like all of, you know, the central city is just predominantly white. And then on the outskirts are, you know, just every kind of ethnicity. And there's still a lot of racial inharmony here that, that hasn't really fluctuated, and I was, and that's why I wasn't too surprised to actually see some over-the-top exploits, you know, of the protesting and stuff, because there's still a lot of people who feel that they don't necessarily have too much of a voice here, and getting out and doing those protests, I guess, is a way of, you know, raising their voice.
Well, and the one thing that I thought was incredibly impacting was the photograph that was taken last week in Portland of the young African-American boy who, as the description by the photographer had said, he was standing on sort of the sidelines of the protests that were going on around the Ferguson case. And he had a sign held up saying that he was giving free hugs. And so there was an older white police officer, Portland police officer, who went up to him and started talking to him about it and said, "Why are you doing this sort of thing?" And he's like, "I just think that it's something that we need to change what's been going on." And so the police officer offered to give him a hug. The young boy broke down and started crying. And that picture got plastered all over the internet, internationally, because it was even like on BBC's website and stuff. And I think that, to me, for all the people that bitched and complained about whether or not the violence and the looting that took place in Ferguson was just or not just, whether or not the cases themselves were handled correctly or that our system is completely broken, when you see something like that where it's just two people who have come from completely different points in the world and they're just like, none of it matters. The guy's
right.
Patch on the arm being a police officer doesn't matter. The fact that this young boy's crying doesn't matter. It's the fact that they're connecting on a certain level that they're human beings. And that's where the change really needs to make, obviously needs to start. I know from the information that we saw over here on the West Coast about Chicago was pretty much end of the world sort of thing. At any point in time, Chicago was just going to catch on fire and you all are just going to have to fend for yourselves kind of thing.
Right.
Go loot Costco and have at it. Did it kind of feel like that at any point, or are you still just sort of like it was just a day of bad traffic?
Well, I don't. I'm all public transpo, so it doesn't really matter to me about the traffic. But it didn't. I think it was a bit hyped by the media, which was obviously. But I didn't really feel – no, I didn't have any of those end-of-the-world worries. I mean, when Ferguson – when that happened, I was expecting a lot more outbursts here. And I think that the Eric Gardner case was a little bit more of like a post-reaction, and that's why people started taking to the streets. But there hasn't been any, like, looting or anything crazy here.
Do you think if Ferguson had not taken place, that the Gardner reaction would have been stronger?
I gotta wonder. That's a tough question. I mean, I think that the Ferguson case definitely raised a lot of awareness about people's, especially inner city people's views on, just how tough the law enforcement can be. But I don't know. That's a tough question, actually. I'm not sure.
Yeah, go online and ask your peeps that one.
Yeah.
So I've got about 3:39 right now on my time. What I'm going to do real quick is I'm going to keep Sean online with us, but I want to play a piece from one of the other songs off the album called Pressure, so everybody out there can listen to it and you can get kind of an idea of how the song goes, and then we'll jump back into the discussion of the album. So give me 1 second here, and we shall hear this. And this is off the album Worst Case Scenario Volume 1. We'll be taking calls here in a second on area code 646. 727-2914. And this is Pressure from... to play about a minute and a half of that. I really like that track in the fact that whereas Future's Leisure Pursuits was probably the most low-key song on the album, I like this because it reminds me so much of its very classic club song in the fact of being techno, very much like from the first Terminator movie, and Nudge Nudge, in the scene in the tech-noir club that she's getting chased after. I think that it's very much a sellable kind of song. The DJs would really dig this because it's mixable with other stuff, and I think I'm going to play the heck out of this right now. So weird from the inspiration of doing the different songs, because it's really a vast array of tastes, honestly, listening to it. Because a lot of musicians that are really good at what they do, like, I love Sam Smith right now. I think Sam Smith has got an amazing voice. He's a really good writing talent. He's great at the songs he does. But the entire album is a broken heart album, and there's only one upbeat song for the whole thing. You guys, on the other hand, yours... you do a much more variety of stuff, so I think that a lot more people have interest in it. In the fact that you were saying that it has a lot to do with the influence from the Terminator stuff, when you're walking through your day, is it thumping in your head, or is there a lyric going through repeating or whatever? How does the creative process for the songs that you put on this album come together?
Well, usually I'm trying to think about how many things I can incorporate that I enjoy into like something that makes sense, hopefully, to a listener. And I never wanted to be just a one-note kind of industrial metal band. I always wanted to try and dip into other avenues and other genres because, you know, it's all electronic music to me, whether it's, you know, hip-hop or industrial or techno and or pop, you know. It's like all music's pretty electronic now. I always just try and cover as much electronic styles as I can that makes sense in an album and then compile them into something that makes hopeful sense to the listener.
Yeah, because that's kind of, I think, one of the things that keeps certain bands around for a while is the fact that they change not only just with how music is changing on sometimes a day-to-day, month-to-month experience, but like, example, Queen, even though they had that We Will Rock You and Bohemian Rhapsody background, they still went out and did Radio Gaga, and they still went out and did towards the end Driving Me or I'm Going Slightly Mad. Really vast different types of music that you can listen to and go, this is still Queen, but it's still a lot of different types of music. And that's
right,
what
right.
I kind of that's what I got from this album, was that it's still you guys, but it's still a lot of influence, and it's a lot
yeah.
of stuff that, like what you were saying, that people showing up at the show, they're not all going to be leather and latex and that sort of thing.
Right.
They're going to be baseball caps and sweatshirts and sports t-shirts kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to verify if this was one of you guys or if it was a fan. I saw somebody had a tattoo of the logo,
mm-hmm.
the circle with the headset logo that you guys have, which
right.
I think personally, greatest logo in the world. I'm going to get that tattooed. is that something that you guys did yourselves, or was that a fan tattoo?
Oh, that was a fan tattoo. We don't have any tattoos.
Oh.
Yep.
And that's gotta be strange too, because like if you had designed it and then all of a sudden you've got somebody coming up and it's permanently on their body for life.
Yeah, yeah. I mean it's a bit of a shock when we've seen that in the past, because there's been a few people that have had cyanotic or glitch mode. Glitch mode tattoos, and it's like, well, damn, man, you're committed, you know.
It's like all those older middle class folks that have that Prism Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon logo tattooed as a like tramp stamp or something.
Right.
Now, talking about the next project, doing a part two album, is it just going to be like remixes of this album itself, or is it going to kind of be like outtakes?
No, it's more just a continuation, because we had
okay.
so many songs that we'd compiled over the past couple years that it kind
oh,
of
cool.
made sense to just break it into two albums and not like
oh,
shove
nice.
Too much information down somebody's throat at once.
I feel like the last Harry Potter book. It was so big it came with its own little red wagon that you carried behind you. So yeah, that'll be definitely awesome. I'm looking forward to that. That's excitement. The other thing that I wanted to note for folks is the pictures of
mm-hmm.
The guys. So if you can help me out here, it's yourself, the other guy, the guitarist is Chris, correct?
Yep.
And then who was the guy that was? Now you guys are just basically the band, and then your guys is. Keyboardist was with the tour, correct?
Yep, that's our buddy Jordan, and he worked on a couple of the songs too. Yep. And then we've had like a revolving cast of characters, because it's always kind of down to, you know, who can come out and tour at that point, or you know, who has an idea for this song. Like it's very much like an open committee process, and then I usually just end up kind of funneling it all into the final product.
Yeah. Because I noticed that with the listings that you had for some of the other acts that you've worked with, like, oh, come on, scroll up. Try and get this thing. Like the Rabbit Hole?
Uh-huh. Yeah, they were touring partners on the last on this last Terminator thing.
Okay.
Did.
And with, I apologize, my computer is very slow because I have Wi-Fi. With the Breath and Decay album cover that I've got floating around, The Awakening.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that a recent project for you? Is that something that you are hopefully still trying to get out there?
Yeah, that's a buddy of ours who had actually had us on his record label, and then he came on over to us. We've known each other for like 15 years. That's our friend Eric Dusick, and it was just fun to help him co-produce his little dance floor pack of tracks. And he's been doing that for a while, and he's got a couple more in the pipeline. So hopefully, you know, we get a couple more of those out there. Yeah, that was a fun project to work on.
So you've got Volume 2 coming out. Yay, I'm excited about that. Happy dance. Happy Snoopy dance. And then, I'm sorry, the other stuff that you were saying that you want to work on that's coming out, the side project that's kind of the your geekiness project that you want to do, what can you tell us, or do we have to wait on pins and needles for it?
It's just basically like us doing our homage to the whole kind of Terminator mythology, and it's called Terminator with like a instead of a three or instead of an E it's a three, and you know, instead of an I
okay.
it's a one. And we had that lurking around for a little bit because Terminator soundtracks are pretty definitive to me. So doing something that's soundtrack oriented, like I'm a real soundtrack fan. I listen to a lot of scores, so
yeah.
it's going to be our chance to kind of meld some of the industrial dance stuff with like soundtrack elements. And I think that would be pretty fun project.
You and I could sit down and have hours of chat time over that because I am also obsessed. I'm obsessed with music in general, but I have lots of scores and lots of soundtracks. And even though a lot of people kind of think of him as being a hack, I really do appreciate John Williams because I think he's done a lot of diversity. It's not all been the same sort of Star Wars kind of theme music. One of the things that he did that was completely different from everything else that he's ever done is the soundtrack to The Witches of Eastwick. I love the movie. Sorry, gay boy. Gotta love Cher. It's in my DNA. I can't get rid of it. But when I went and saw that film in the movie theater back in the 80s with Jack Nicholson and everybody else, I was like blown away by this music. If you get the DVD of The Witches of Eastwick, you can play the movie with just the score itself, and it's mind-blowing. It's fantastic. So besides doing the Harry Potter stuff as well, when he did this, I was like, oy, this is fantastic. And I can listen. It's one of those ones, I'm sure you can what you were mentioning before with the Terminator 2, I literally can listen to it in sync over and over and over again without stop, and I know exactly what song it is, where it's at, what it was on the cassette, because I used to have it on cassette.
Yeah.
I wasn't old school enough to have a track. But
I had the T2 score on cassette. That was the first time I got it.
So John Williams, I can appreciate. I actually really kind of like the scores that Halloween,
John Carpenter.
Carpenter. The music that he did, because I think he's very underrated as the fact that he did his own music for his movies.
John Carpenter is a huge influence too. Yeah.
And he did wonderful music that a lot of people were like, oh, because he did horror films, let's stick him in this animated little thing and that thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I think probably the most overused piece of music that I think is probably one of the most classic is Lakmé. Which if you recognize it, it's the piece from The Hunger where Catherine Deneuve seduces Sarandon.
Yeah.
Yeah, the piano piece. and it's in car commercials and airplane commercials and everything else. But I think it's one of the most Delibes, I think it is the person who wrote it. I think it's one of the most beautiful sounding pieces that's out there that's used in movies. So hopefully, if we can get your music out there as much, it will be constantly used just like that. And just think of all the ka-ching you'll get off that.
That licensing stuff, man, that's where we've made a lot of that's where we've had a lot of like placements and random things. We were in a couple video game trailers for the Chronicles of Riddick a couple of years ago. And,
excellent. Vice City, you're all set.
Yeah, exactly.
Throw
us on the Hard Rock station.
Okay, so we're coming towards the end of the show. I just wanted to wrap up towards the end song that I wanted to play is Signal Machines. It's going to be played in full. It's about 4.5 minutes. And I like this song a lot because it very much to me is kind of the antithesis of the album itself. It kind of has a feel of Metropolis to me. Anything that has that concept of robots thinking for themselves, the Matrix, whatever. And of course, that ongoing conversation that I seem to have with you, which is Terminator. So I'm going to go ahead and shoot it out there. We didn't get any phone calls, which I'm kind of, I'm bummed out. I'm sad. But, if folks are out there that are listening to this, want to be able to check this out, you can always listen to it again at the same link. And then, also you can download it into an MP3 format, which is in the top right-hand corner. There's three little icons. The first one, which is a cloud with a little lightning bolt coming out of it. If you click on that, right-click and hit Save As, it will save to your computer as an MP3 in a letter number format. So, anyway, again, I want to thank Mr. Sean Payne for joining us today and talking about his new album, which is all kinds of exciting. And again, all the contact information is on the page here. Worst Case Scenario, Volume 1 is available right now for purchase. So, if you need a Christmas present for that person who has everything, this is what you need to get them. So give me 1 second. I will go ahead and put Sean on mute, and we will start the last track. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and I'll talk to you guys next week. I will be interviewing my friend John Bartholomew next week, who he and I worked in politics together, and worked in nonprofits. So we will be talking politics, nonprofits, and whatever else we can figure out. Since he is an obsessive about tikis, that may come up as well. So have you guys a good and safe weekend, and thanks a lot.
you're not just human anymore, are you? Or are you?